years of service, they've helped thousands of individuals right where they live. Learn more about Care Beyond the Boulevard this month at Community Lending of America's site, clakc.com.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Terry. What if the very thing you seek in life is what you're called to give to others? On today's show, host David Bell speaks with Gary Dumas, author, educator, and personal development coach, helping men and women find and grow into the absolute best version of themselves. When Gary started providing substance abuse and anger management programs for criminal courts in Kansas City, he quickly saw the need for something more. Rather than teaching his clients to just say no, Gary understood the power of teaching his clients to just say yes to the absolute best version of themselves. Join us as we talk with Gary about how his own experiences helped him to develop a non-traditional approach to assist others in reaching their potential. We will air our calendar in the middle of the hour. We would like to thank everyone who pledged to support KKFI last week during our winter fund drive. If you missed the opportunity to help support our program, please go online at kkfi.org and click the donate button. We value our listeners. This is why we strive to bring interesting and vital programs. We hope you'll listen. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. Now, our show.
When looking at issues of substance abuse, mental health, and the criminal justice system, as well as race, I often see a ball of yarn so tangled that the very thought of starting to untangle it is overwhelming. I don't know where to start. And then I meet someone like today's guest, Gary Dumas, who offers such a unique and ultimately positive perspective on the solution that I am once again inspired to continue the work that needs to be done. Gary Dumas is an author, an educator, and a personal development coach. I hope that each of you find a takeaway from today's interview for your own personal development. I know I have, and I know that I will. And with that, we welcome Gary Dumas to our show. Gary, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, David, so much. As I've said many times throughout our dialogue since we first connected a few years back, that I'm grateful. You know, I'm always grateful for anyone that thinks enough of what I think of the people that I serve to engage them to or meet into any capacity regarding inspiring people. So I'm appreciative and thank you for having me.
Sure. I want to briefly talk about kind of your younger years, just a few concepts that you and I had spoken about when we had met previously. And the first one, the first thing that you had said to me was that you always had a lot of vision, but you never really took action. And I guess one of the themes of today's show is going to be the term vision. And I know that's a theme that you use in your classes. What is vision? What does that mean? And how do we use that in our own lives?
Well, that's a good place to start, because as I was explaining to you before, I am a huge, huge advocate for vision. And just to your point, so I don't get off on a tangent, it is so easy to do, especially under a subject regarding vision, because I believe that that's something that is so overlooked and undervalued in today. And one of the reasons why I believe it's so overlooked is because, like anything, you can hear something, you know, so redundant and so often, and it almost loses its potency, so to speak. But vision, just to put it short, is the ability to see the future from the present, just to put it real simple. And when I look at it from that perspective, which is a very simple perspective, it just reminds me of how many nights, you know, I used to could not wait to go to sleep at night just so I could dream, you know, dream of being in a different place, you know. And I don't have to necessarily describe it as a better place. Well, I could, but differently. And the reason why I use the word different over better, because for some people, that's acceptable. It doesn't have to be a place better than where they are now. It's just to be anywhere different from where they are. So vision, again, is just the ability to see the future from the present. But to add to that, as I stated in our conversations, is that the goal is for you to believe exactly what it is that you see. Because you can see something, for example, you, which is what we're talking about, me as an individual, I saw a lot of my future or what I would like to see in the future in the present. What made it believable was that I actually believed it. I actually believed what I saw to the point where I was like, you know what? I can be this person. I can be in that position. I can actually do these things. I can see me becoming a different person or a changed person or an improved person. I can see me having these experiences. And so in short, that's how I would explain vision, the ability to see the future from the present.
But I know in your own life, there seemed to have been a process you had to go through to realize that. And I know you had talked about going to college, you played basketball at some point. You said you weren't coachable. I know you dropped out. You indicated you kind of ran the streets. There was something about you at that time that was different than you are now in terms of your understanding of who you are as a person and where you wanted to go. If we could go back to that moment in time where you were not coachable, you said you were a mama's boy, that hindered you a lot at that moment. How would you describe that, Gary, to us?
Well, in short, although I'll elaborate on it to your point, I didn't have a character. And although I realized that then, well, I realized it now, but I didn't realize it then. And that's one of the points that I always draw from to inspire individuals in the programming now, is that I had the vision. I saw myself becoming, I saw myself doing. But one thing that I didn't see, and I didn't see it because I wasn't aware of it, at least at that age, was the importance of character. And so what would happen is that even though I saw myself, playing basketball and pursuing dreams in terms of being in the field of broadcasting, things of that nature, what I didn't see is because I didn't know was the character that would be involved, the work ethics. I have this piece that I live by now called Practice in Private, the Person You See You As in Public. there was no way I would have even thought to consider anything like that back then. So I didn't have the character. I was a loose cannon a lot of times in regards to my temper, my attitude. I just didn't see things in the way that they needed to be seen in order for me to actually lay hold of the things that I saw myself becoming or even that I wanted to become. And I lost out on a lot of situations. I lost out on a lot of opportunity. I would go so as far as to say is I wasted a lot of time, but looking back on hindsight, then of course I have summed that up to, okay, whatever didn't happen then was because you needed all those experiences to be who you are now, which of course we'll get into that, whenever you leave. But I didn't have a character, David. I wasn't coachable. If things didn't go my way, I would be upset. I certainly wasn't going to take any type of reprimand or correction or anything like that. I certainly wasn't going to take any of that because to me, that was foreign. The only way I saw correction growing up in the environment that I grew up in at the time was, that's a personal attack. You're trying to attack me, or those are fighting words, or you're being disrespectful, or you're overstepping your boundaries or things of that nature. And so there's no way at that time, which was in my, younger years, even through my teenage years, even clear into my early adulthood, actually, to early 20s and so forth. I just didn't really see that or appreciate that as something or phases of it anyway that was needed to help me to become the person that I saw myself in those dreams and visions.
And so I know it also during the time period as you grew into your, I think you said maybe your 20s a little bit later, I know you dealt with issues of alcohol and depression. Mm-hmm. How did those two issues, alcoholism and depression, come about, do you believe, in your own life? And how did you first start to recognize that those were issues you had to deal with?
Oh man, what a nightmare just thinking back on that, and I'm glad I'm able to talk about those things now because I'm always into quotes and aphorisms and affirmations and stuff like that. And in this case is you're not free until you can go public. If you can't go public, then you're not finished yet. So sure. I'm glad that I'm free enough now where I can talk about those things. But, the alcohol kind of came about in most cases, that has happened in most cases for most youth, how they become exposed to alcohol. You go to the high school parties and things of that nature. And, you know, when you first start to go, you know, you haven't drank anything. You're like an enemy of it. Oh, no, I don't want to drink it. But then you see other friends or peers having such a good time, or at least presenting as though they're having a good time. And one of the things that contributed to their good time is them being under the influence. So, of course, eventually we indulged and, you know, started drinking and everything. And at that time, it was fun. You know, we looked at it as something to do, you know, when you're going out to the high school parties and different things like that, as part of the peer pressure. I don't even necessarily want to say peer pressure, because it's just something that we were doing at one particular time. And then as time went on, you know, an addiction was developed. An addiction was developed, and I don't want to get too ahead of our discussion, but an addiction was developed, although I didn't realize it then, but later I realized, looking back on it, it had developed because I had used that as something that I needed in order to have a good time. And that's kind of where the whole thing started. You know, I couldn't have a good time without alcohol being involved. I couldn't have a good time without smoking some marijuana. You know, that wasn't something in our discussion, but I'm going to put it out there now, because, you know, this isn't grown post conversation, but, you know, and it's real. We know that it's reality. But I used it to have a good time. And eventually, as time went on, I began to use alcohol to the point where I would, you know, spend all of my extra money. You know, I found myself working jobs just to make sure that I was able to, you know, buy me some, at the time it was California coolers. I just thought about that. California coolers, you know, years ago. And then with some of my roots in California and different things. So that was like the thing to drink, and it was all fruity and tasted good and everything. But just engaged in that a lot. And then eventually I would experience a lot of different thoughts, although I didn't realize at the time it was depression. But looking back on it, of course, now as a clinician, I know that depression is simply a collection of negative thoughts where you would isolate, amongst other things. But I experienced a lot of that in my youth, where I just didn't want to be around. And this didn't happen as a result of me just hitting rock bottom or nothing. These were just some normal, at least what I thought was normal, experiences. Now, some people, you know, that may be hearing this say, you know, well, I had times I didn't want to be around people and I didn't drink. And that may be true, because depending on a person's personality and their natural temperament, which is who they are genetically encoded to be at the time of birth, people are different. And so for me, being a natural people person, when I realized that I had times where I wanted to isolate and be by myself and didn't want to be around people, I realized later that what I was going through then was the depression. And so, of course, I didn't find it out till many years later. So the alcohol coupled with the depression was just kind of exacerbating or bringing more out of, you know, what I was experiencing on certain occasions. It was just bringing it out more, you know, with the alcohol and different things. And this must have went on for, man, probably early 20s, late teens, early 20s, clear up to mid to late 30s, you know, these experiences. So that's something that prior to me becoming a clinician, I didn't realize as a problem. And that almost kind of ties me into your original intro, or your opening line, as we call it in radio, where you mentioned about the mental health and things of that nature. That was a form of mental health. And I know we'll probably touch more on it later, but a lot of times people think that, or I thought, you know, in the community that I was in, and a lot of my peers and people that I was around, you know, to us, that was our norm. We never saw that as a mental health issue.
I want to ask you,
Go ahead.
I want to ask you about that, because I know it, in the criminal justice system, and primarily as a public defender, and also now, I found that different communities treated mental health in a different way. So my white clients, I immediately look at someone and they say they're not feeling well. I'm like, oh, that's depression. You're going to go to a therapist. Which therapist are you going to go to? We're going to get a note from the doctor. We're going to go back to the prosecutor and move in that direction. with some of my clients from the Black community, there is a hesitation with the mental health, and I'm going to use that. I'm generalizing, okay, but at the same time, I've noticed it enough to be able to say that there's something there to it. And I'm wondering, during our conversations, you had suggested to me that depression was just accepted almost as this is how it was. It wasn't called mm-hmm. depression. It was just this is the way it was. Could you explain that a little bit to our listeners?
Yeah, well, for one, we didn't know what to call it, at least based on the environment that I was in and that I grew up in and I was around. And as I wanted to always clarify that, because in the event that some listeners that are Black, African-American or what have you would hear that and say, well, it wasn't like that now. Well, that's fine for you. But I'm referring to the community that I grew up in. You know, when you talk about mental health, you know, as I mentioned to you in the in our prior discussions, that was only something that we saw white people would deal with, you know, in terms of looking at something as mental health. You know, we could see, you know, someone, you know, taking off their clothes and running through the neighborhood. And we say, oh, man, they're crazy, you know. And, I mean, of course, something too extreme. We know that there's something wrong, but I cannot recall at all anybody describing anything as mental health. Not only that, but also to the point where they need to get some help, you know. Now, eventually, many years later, from some experiences and different things that we would see with parents and different things of that nature. But for a long time, we always thought or saw these behaviors with depression. Of course, we didn't look at it as that then, but these extreme outbursts or these extreme behaviors and things of that nature, we didn't see it as, you know, mental health or certainly nothing where we believe or thought to say that you need to go see a doctor, you know. And even if that were to come up, you know, I can recall vividly where people, man, you don't need to see a doctor, you know. You know, white people do that, you know. And so we just never looked at it as something, at least for a season, a long season anyway, that was something that we should, you know, really look into.
And so does alcohol and in some cases marijuana become the prescription, if you will, to handle this thing that we don't even know that it's something to be treated? Is that what's happening?
That's exactly what had happened for a long season in the community, is that, you know, we would always drink it, you know, and I can see why, because of the effects of alcohol. I mean, it's a mask for some. You know, it takes you to a different place. It puts you in a different world. You cannot think about things, or you cannot worry about things at that moment. And I remember one time where I had so much to drink, and I was staying with a friend of mine. We were roommate together, and I was in my early 20s, very early 20s at the time. And his big brother came home, and I was in the room just crying, you know. And I remember hearing his big brother, my friend's big brother's voice, like, man, what's wrong with Gary? What's going on? You know, what happened? You know, all he knew was he left to go to work, and we were having a good time and drinking and everything. And he came back, and I'm upstairs crying, you know. And so he would ask me, man, what's wrong? You okay? And I didn't have an answer, mm-hmm. you know. But I can't tell you what I was experiencing. What I was experiencing during that moment that led up to me crying and almost violently, you know, I just started thinking about a lot of different things from my youth. Now, I wasn't molested or anything like that, and I don't minimize that because there are a lot of people who have experienced that. But I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of, you know, homicides, growing up in the environment that I grew up in. I saw a lot of domestic violence, which that alone can traumatize you. Of course, I didn't know that then, but I do now. But I had just seen a lot. And not only that, I was just unhappy, but I didn't know why. I just go ahead.
But at some point you have to, what makes you change that? If that's going to continue on, we're going to keep drinking, keep feeling this way, but not knowing there's potentially a way out. At some point you got to hit rock bottom, Gary, I assume, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and how did you know you hit there? And maybe you're describing the rock bottom, and I apologize for interrupting you, but how did you know you hit wherever rock bottom was that you got there?
Well, and that's a good question, because I hadn't touched on it. And now that takes me to that segment. I realized I hit rock bottom, David, when I had suicide ideation. I realized that I had hit rock bottom when I found myself, and I don't want to get into the spirituality piece of it because people have different beliefs about it. But I remember seeing the scripture, reading the scripture one time where it said that a drunkard leads to poverty. And, you know, and I don't know what led me to that scripture. I don't know what even caused me to read the Bible at that particular time. But to your point, that's when I realized I hit rock bottom because I had like no money. It's almost like I was at a place where, you know, family's having a lot of problems with you, a lot of issues with you, you know. And more to elaborate on that, in my case, it was, you know, my family like, Gary, this is not you. You know, you're better than this. What are you doing? What the heck is wrong with you? Something's not right. And just to hear that in the extreme in their voice and then realizing I'm at a point now where I didn't have a car. You know, I didn't have a place with my name on the lease. You know, I didn't have a job or anything. And not only did what I didn't have, but I once had those things and lost them. Mm. And that's what took me to realize how in the world, what caused me to get from there to here? And that's how I realized, man, it's this outlaw, dude. You know, you're waiting at the liquor store when it opens up at 10 o'clock. Now, for some people that's listening to this, you know, this not to offend anybody. People do what they do for the reason they do it for. But regarding me, that's how I knew that, yeah, it's a problem. Everything I had, I lost. What little bit I had. I was at the liquor stores before they opened. I found myself at one time, you know, for example, and this is real, when I used to like to drink certain types of drinks, at some point I didn't care what I drank. And I know a lot of people probably never thought to look at it like that. But for me, I got to the point where I didn't care what I drank. I just wanted something to drink. Mm. Where it made a whiff from some type of champagne in certain years of my life to just whatever, you know. I just wanted to get back to that feeling that I thought caused me to escape from whatever it was that was on my mind had I not drank as much as I did.
So, you know, one of the things you and I have talked about a lot, and I know you in each of our fields we deal with a lot, is what is it that causes the flame to ignite? And perhaps the flame is always there. I always refer to it as a flame under a client's rear end, but maybe it's more of a spark of the divine within us that maybe we get to see or becomes apparent for a second. And I'm wondering, in your life, was it seeing that scripture? And it's okay if spirituality is part of your life, part of your experiences, we'll talk about it. Is it that moment? Is that where the spark emerges or becomes visible to you, or is light lit under your rear end?
Well, spirituality is a huge part of it, but I won't talk a lot about that. I want to keep it practical. Okay. I want to keep it practical. But I will acknowledge the fact that spirituality was a huge part in my life and remains to be a huge part. So I will be happy to elaborate more on that. But for now, I will just make mention that I go back to that vision. I eventually believed what I saw and who I saw, and I realized what was keeping me or what had kept me from becoming that person that I saw in that vision. And I'll be happy to elaborate on that as you lead.
That's wonderful. We are talking to Gary Dumas. Gary, by the way, how do I say your name? I keep saying it wrong every time. I'm sorry.
Dumas is fine. It's actually Dumas. It's a French
Dumas.
Name.
I want to say it Dumas. So and I'm it, sorry.
Yeah. Gary I just Dumas. Remember people when I would say Dumas back in the day, people looking like I'm really like, you know.
Well, we are talking to Gary Dumas about personal development within the context of drug, alcohol abuse, and some other issues. When we get back, we'll talk to Gary about how this inspiration and realization in his life, how he was able to pay it forward to help a number of other individuals with their own issues. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
Support for KKFI by Metropolitan Community College. For more than 100 years, Metropolitan Community College has served as an accessible pathway for education and career development in Kansas City. With more than 120 degree and certificate programs, internship opportunities, and flexible scheduling, students can customize their MCC experience to match their goals and interests. Discover campus locations and learn more at mcckc.edu. MCC, your college, your future.
Hello, my name is Marcus Lewis, and this is a KKFI Black History Moment honoring Melba Liston. Melba Liston was an American jazz trombonist, arranger, and composer. Other than those playing in all-female bands, she was the first woman trombonist to play in big bands during the 1940s through the 1960s. But as her career progressed, she became better known as an arranger, and in particular with her partnership with pianist Randy Weston. Other major artists whom she worked with, Dizzy Gillespie, Billie Holiday, John Coltrane, and Count Basie. And what makes her special to us is she was born right here in Kansas City, Missouri. She started playing trombone at the age of 7, but then at the age of 10, she moved to Los Angeles, California, where she was classmates with Dexter Gordon and Eric Dolphy. After playing youth bands and studying with the Omaha Tower, she joined a big band led by Gerald Wilson in 1944. She began her career playing with some of the greats. Dexter Gordon, Dizzy Gillespie's big band, which included John Coltrane on saxophone. After a brief break from the road, she began collaborating in the late 1950s with pianist Randy Weston, arranging compositions, primarily his own, for mid-sized to large ensembles. This association was especially strong in the 1960s, but would continue on till her death in the 1990s. In 1987, she was awarded the Jazz Master's Fellowship of the National Endowment of the Arts. But after suffering repeated strokes, she died in Los Angeles in 1999, a few days after her tribute to Randy Weston's music at Harvard University.
Now the calendar for the week of February 22nd. In compliance with Mayor Lucas' emergency order, ensure necessary public health measures remain in place. See the facts at kcmo.gov. If you're behind on your mortgage, Legal Aid of Western Missouri may be able to provide you with free legal advice and services. If you're a resident of Jackson County, you can give them a call, 816-474-6750. CORI's Network Grief to Relief Workshops start again Monday, February 22nd, 6 p.m. at the City House, the old Best Buy on 40 Highway, 14300 East U.S. Highway 40, KCMO, Meeting Room 2. You may text 816-834-9161, 816-834-9161 when you arrive. You can check to register for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America events this week at momsdemandaction.org. Monday Meets, 4 p.m., an online event today, February 22nd, hosted by the Willow Domestic Violence Center, open to everyone on Facebook Live. Tuesday, February 23rd, 6:30 p.m., Alvin Brooks, a singular figure in the fight for civil rights in Kansas City, reflects on a lifetime of activism, community building, and public service in a conversation with Mayor Quentin Lucas. Watch live at youtube.com/kclibrary.alvinbrooks. Wednesday, February 24th, 6 p.m., Policy and Legislative Advocacy Training Part 2, is an online event hosted by Alive and Well Communities, ACLU of Missouri, and Real Justice Network. Access info at ACLU of Missouri on Facebook. Wednesday, February 24th, 6 p.m., Death is Not Justice, a conversation with Missouri death row exoneree Reggie Griffin, is a virtual event hosted by the KC chapter of Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Access info is available from Ronan at IEEE.org. Wednesday, February 24th, 2 p.m., the 2021 Legislative Update webinar, an online event hosted by Missouri Jobs with Justice. Register at their Facebook page. Thursday, February 25th, 5 p.m., Safe and Welcoming Wyandotte County Phone Bank. Access info at Moore Square on Facebook. Friday, February 26th, 12:30 p.m., Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty invites you to join in the struggle for the abolition of the death penalty at their virtual monthly meetups. This month, they'll cover current clemency campaigns and ways to stop executions. For access info, contact info at madpmo.org. Friday, February 26, 6:30 p.m., Our Voices is an online event hosted by Moore Squared. Do you, a loved one or friend, have a conviction? Ever felt discriminated against when it comes to housing, employment, or other areas of life? Talk about it. Access info at Moore Square on Facebook. Saturday, February 27th, 1 p.m., in honor of Black History Month, there will be a rally in Topeka, Kansas, walk from the Brown versus Board of Education National Historic Site to the Kansas State Capitol. Hosted by the Miller Dream, LLC, masks, water, social distancing will be in place. A list of services, meals, and hotlines are available at lawrenceprogressivecalendar.blogspot.com. That list is updated daily. Please take care of yourselves and others. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought into sharp focus the need for health care reforms that promote universal access to affordable care. COVID-19 has devastated the U.S. prison and jail population. My name is Terry, reminding you these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Stan Thomas. Now we return to our show, David Bell speaking with mental health advocate Gary Dumas.
Good morning, this is David Bell, and you're listening to 90.1 KKFI Jaws of Justice. We're here today with Gary Dumas. We're talking about his own experiences in personal development and how he took that and paid it forward in the career that he's now in. And, you know, one of the things, Gary, when you and I were talking before that was so inspiring to me was how you determined your calling. And if you could explain that in the line that you use, it's something that I have already used myself in my own life. And if you could share that with the listeners, that would be wonderful.
I'll be happy to do that. You know, I remember like yesterday, I had arrived at a point where just kind of pulling from where we left off and continuing in that same vein, as I call it, at this particular portion of our segment. The alcohol had, you know, I was going through a lot with that. And the depression was just like kicking my butt. I had a collection of negative thoughts, had suicide ideation. I got to the point where I just could not see certain neighborhoods and things of that nature. It just, the impact that it had on me mentally was just really taking me there. And taking me there is like a colloquialism we use. People kind of know what that means, taking me there. And so I remember looking for some help. Now, when I say looking for help, I'm not referring to going in to a doctor or anything like that, which I eventually did do. But at that time, you know, David, I just, help for me was somebody to talk to, somebody to validate what I was going through and recognize what could happen or how I can take what I was going through and use that as momentum to go to another place in life. And I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it nowhere. And it's interesting because during that stage of my life, I had experienced a career in being a professional model. I was a runway model, did some runway modeling for a major company out of Chicago for a while. And, so I, you know, fast life, streets and everything combined. I was dealing with alcohol. And I said that about that career piece to say this. As I was searching for help, it's interesting because I would want to connect with people to talk and really open up and just be transparent. But they would be looking at and trying to see what kind of car I'm driving. You know, I pulled up to want to talk and be transparent, you know. They would, man, where'd you get that, you know, what you got on, you know, what you wearing? I remember one time I was out somewhere and I had on a linen suit and I had on some tube socks. It was the funniest story ever. I had on a linen suit, some tube socks, and Bally shoes. I don't know how long you lived in Kansas City, but Bally of Switzerland used to be on the plaza back in the 80s. So I had on these Bally shoes, this linen suit, and these tube socks. And I remember somebody said, man, you look sharp. Why are you got on those tube socks? Hurt my feelings so bad. what I realized later, the reason why I had those tube socks on, because I stopped caring, man. I just wanted to talk to somebody, and for people to point out those things, it's like, man, you tripping on what kind of socks I got on. Little do you know, man, I'm thinking about killing myself, you know? And so going through that season of trying to find somebody that I can trust to talk to, they wouldn't judge me, you know, because I heard the rumors, man, Gary, he's doing bad. He only have a car. He da-da-da-da-da. You hear the rumors. And so I realized, I'm like, man, you know what? I'm never going to be able to talk to anybody, let alone if I'm telling them how I'm really feeling about certain things and seek some refuge. So it came to me. It's like, man, you know what? You know what you need, right? Yeah, I need somebody to talk to. I need to be inspired. I need to be encouraged. I need to be believed in. I need some insights. And that's when it came to me, man. You are the person to give that to other people. Mm. And for me, that was me recognizing my calling. For me, that was a spiritual encounter. Because who else naturally, at least during that season, would have thought to have told me, to tell me something like that? The very things you need, Gary, is what you're called. Nobody that I'm around is even thinking like that. That's not any disrespect towards anybody, but they weren't. But it, at the same time, it wasn't for me to get that from anyone. It was for me to experience as a spiritual awakening. And so it was at that moment, I was like, okay, I realize now what it is that I'm called to do. I'm called to do all these things and present all these things out of what was once my own need. So I couldn't give out of my deficit. But what I did do is it inspired me to the point to where I had obtained the momentum to start taking the steps to improve and repair my life.
Mm. You know that. Go ahead. No, the process. Well, go ahead.
I'll say this and I'll close out so you can move forward. In the process of me doing that, as I sought refuge, which I did this in the church, by the way, under pastors at that time, and I was able to get the refuge I needed. And as I obtained that, I was able to still get enough further development within myself where I can start trusting myself to inspire the people and not pass on any of my issues onto other people. And I love to we need to talk about that another time because that's huge. But
well, I just want to say the line for everyone that you said to me, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the very things you are needing, you are being called to give to other people. Is that right?
Absolute very things that I needed is what I realized I was called to give to other people, because how else will I know how important it is if I once had needed it myself?
But what's
especially as a man.
What's fascinating about it, though, Gary, is that in my own mind, it causes you to stop necessarily looking inward, almost in a selfish way, and started looking to other people and giving to other people. And in that doing, it helps you in your own well-being. Mm-hmm. Right, your focus is off you now. I'm going to focus on someone else with that very need. And somehow in doing that, it satisfies the very thing you were looking for. It's a pretty awesome concept, Gary.
Now, with that piece, but with the understanding, this is huge, and you'll appreciate this, with the understanding that I needed to still arrive at some level of being built up first.
Right.
Because what happens a lot of times, especially in this field that I'm in, I see a lot of people who are so ready to go out and help people when they themselves still need a little help. And it's okay to get there, to do what you want to do, to follow your passion. But let's get to a place first, you know, where you're not hypocritical, which is kind of harsh, but where you have actually received some healing and some things. That's why I mentioned so you don't pass what you're experiencing now off on some other people, like past your pain. You got to get past those certain things. It's something that we call leading while bleeding. You know, I'm people out here leading, trying to lead people, and they themselves are bleeding.
Right.
You know, and I understand, you know, their heart, but you got to get certain things in order first, in order for you to go out and move forward. But yeah, I realized that's what I was called to get other people. And, oh man, you know, if I could describe the way I felt at that moment, it was almost like I was snatched out of my alcoholism. Spiritually, I was, but I had to go through the practical steps. I was snatched out of my episodes with depression right at that moment because I recognized something and the light just came on. like, okay, I can do this. I can win at this thing because I'm called to help other people. And so that was one of the many experiences at that time.
Eventually, and we're skipping over a lot, Gary, and you're the type of guest we need multiple hours with, because you've got so many fascinating things that have gone on in your life, and the way you describe them and the way you've kind of dissected them and be able to explain them is just as wonderful. But you eventually wind up at Swope Parkway Imani House as a counselor, and you're helping people with addiction. And I wanted you to describe kind of what was going on there, and then what led you to where you're at now with the Dumas Company.
I remember, and I'll make this beginning piece of that real quick. I remember praying in the parking lot of the apartment complex that I lived in at the time. I said, place me in a situation where I can use all of my past while pursuing my future going forward in a career that inspires people. And I looked up, I knew somebody that knew somebody, got an interview with Swope, the Imani House, hired me right on the spot, and more confirmation that that's where I was supposed to be. And, oh, man, awesome experience. I mean, to be able to work in it, I don't even call it work. In fact, I would get offended. You know, you want to work? What do you mean? I don't work. It is what I love to do, you know. But I was in the environment at Swope as a counselor. In fact, I started out as a tech. I worked overnight, 12 to 8, never forget. Where I would manage the front desk, and at a certain time, I'd go out, you know, prepare breakfast, you know, with my colleague and everything, and get the clients checked in for residential. At the time, it was women on one side, men on the other side. I mean, it was just a perfect world for me to be in, to help people that I can relate to, people that look like me. When I say look like me, meaning people who have been through, had the war wounds, you know, and would. And just at their wit's end of going through those situations and wanting to connect with someone that can at least give them the playbook or roadmap on what they need to do to go further. Awesome experience. Was there for many years. And then eventually there were clients that was coming to me that I recognized did not necessarily need full service treatment, but still needed some form of programming due to a positive UA. And so during that time, I realized, okay, I have some ideas. I was always heavily active in doing group classes, psychoanalysis, group therapy classes, things of that nature. So I knew I could always move forward and start my own programming as just doing education groups. However, personal development was my thing. And the reason why I gravitated so much for personal development for two reasons that I'll break in case you want to go a different direction. One, because it helped me. And I was just a fortunate one. I never went to any treatment programming. Not to say I didn't need it. For one, I didn't know about it. But whatever the case is or was, I never, you know, went to any treatment programming. It was my studies and my interest in personal development. I was always a big reader of books and a fan of different authors that talked about self-improvement, things of that nature. And so that's how I became such a fan of personal development, because it worked on me. And so I realized that alcohol and depression wasn't the problem. That was a byproduct of some other things that was directly related to me personally on the inside. And so once I became a believer of that, I realized that that's the area or the space that I wanted to participate in as a service provider. And so I made the decision during my transition out of Swope.
And you know what's interesting, I found, is that the individuals in my career that seem to get the most attention are the addicts, are the ones I know that come into court that are nodding off because they're coming down off of something. Individuals where the court just says, all right, I want to take you, put you in a detox, go through some 28-day program, whatever. The individuals you're talking about are the individuals that may test positive on a UA for some substance that they're not permitted to have while they're on their probation, but they're not necessarily an addict, and the focus needs to be more personal development. And I guess, why is it that you focused on that segment, if you will, versus those individuals and addicts together? Why focus on that particular segment?
Well, for one, because of their response. Because to me, that always confirms if what you're doing is something to be done. I recognize the response. Anytime I will talk about subject matter related to personal development, even during full service treatment programs, participants would respond, really gravitate, the light would come on, the discussions would be rich, and the outcomes would be, I remember one time where, and I need to add this in, when I left Swope, I had over 150 hours of unpaid sick time. That's how committed I was. I remember one time where I wasn't feeling well, but because I love what I did, I went to work anyway or went to Swope anyway for a class, and it was an awesome class. And I remember a guy come to me after class. Dumas, can I talk to you? I said, yeah, what's going on? He said, man, you know what? I almost get choked up when I said it. He said, you know, Dumas, I wasn't going to come today. He said, I'll see my killer myself this morning. He said, but man, I made myself come, and I'm so glad I did. This was an awesome class. You know, so that's one of the many. I've gotten several stories like that, even now with the Dumas Company. But that's how more confirmation that personal development, because we have people that battle addiction that knows just as much about drugs and alcohol, David, as we do.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear. For the people that I'm called to serve, that doesn't work for them. So the personal development portion, when I talk about the sharpening of the qualities and how to make a positive, you know, transformation, transition, how growth from your experiences enables you to be more equipped to deal with life and life outcomes and situations, and your raise of awareness and increasing your self-efficacy. You know, you can just see the emphasis, you know, how I talk about those words. And so that's why personal development is the way to go for me.
And, you know, one of the things that I asked you before, and I was kind of inspired by your answer, is how is it that you get a vision if it's something I've never seen before? So I know I'm in a place, I know I want to get to somewhere else, but I don't know where that else is. When you have clients that come to you, do they already have that vision there? Or is it that they just know they need to be somewhere else? How do you help them form that? Or is that something that comes from within?
Well, in most cases, it started as an idea. They've had an idea of doing something different, or an idea. That's why I'm so big about ideas, because that's part of the vision process. But prior to a vision, it can begin as an idea. And they've had these ideas. And then when they come to the Dumas Company, and I'll add this, because this will speak to this question here and while I'm elaborating. Probation officers started calling the Dumas Company the VIP program. Dumas, you know, we got some people who want to refer to your VIP program. And I heard it a few times. I said, okay, yeah, that's fine. But it wasn't called the VIP program. Finally, I heard it enough times. I said, you know what? Okay, I like the VIP program. Let me create something out of that. So I did. So naturally, when you think of VIP, you think about the red carpet and limousines and all that. And although that's not incorrect, but it is incomplete. There's more to that. VIP program, which is something I created, V for validate, I for interpersonal, P for performance. So we validate you. That's the first thing. We validate those ideas as good ideas, as obtainable ideas, as well as validating some thoughts that you might have or have had that would be in direct opposition to those ideas. So your awareness is raised in terms of what you need to do and what you probably don't need to do. So we validate. To the interpersonal, the I, you know, which involves your thoughts and your communication and how you communicate your ideas and things of that nature. So the goal is to not only embrace the transition here, but help yourself with thinking better thoughts about yourself, about your world, about your environment, and then recognize that through your language and how you talk and how you speak. And then third, performance, VIP, P for performance. At the end of the day, it's about what we get here, but is it represented through here? And I tell participants all the time, I ought to be able to look at you and tell what your vision is without even having a conversation with you. If I see you acting a fool in the line at Walmart, I know that your vision is not to take. I know you're not in agreement with your vision to be a better person. But if I see you coming to class every week on time, taking care of your business, putting some effort into it, you know, being intentional and looking at your situations as a way to be better, I can look at you and tell this person wants to be better without having the conversation. And so they accept that as a challenge. And so the VIP personal development, that's in a nutshell, that's kind of how that whole thing plays out with my participants.
And in terms of the motivation to get there, and we'll call it inspiration, you made a comment to me when we were talking about inspiration is intentional. And you told me about a time where someone had listed you down on a program as a motivational speaker. And you said, no, I don't want to be called a motivational speaker. Could you explain why you didn't and what that means in terms of your work now?
Yeah. I didn't say I didn't want to be called a motivational speaker out of false humility or anything. I didn't want to be called a motivational speaker because motivation is a feeling. You can feel motivated. So I don't want to determine the impact or the level of influence of my message or my programming based on how you feel. So, because sometimes you can be inspired and you didn't feel like, man, I didn't feel like this today, but man, I'm glad I did because I was inspired. Inspiration comes from the inside. And so I prefer not to be addressed as a motivational speaker because I'm not just this guy coming in to try to make everybody feel. And I say this because years ago, I was probably about 16, and I went to hear a motivational speaker at the time, won't say his name, internationally known, but it's not about him, it was about where I was at the time. I heard the speaker, David, and I got so fired up. I was about 16, man. And I left out of there, and I just broke out in tears. It's like the air came out of me. Why? Because now I just didn't have the feeling. It's like I didn't get enough substance. What'd you get from it, Gary? I don't know. I just felt good. And I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy that just makes you feel good, but you didn't get any takeaways that inspired you from within to employ what you've gotten from a Dumas Company programming to employ and put it to work for you immediately, even if it's in small bites.
And I wonder, as part of that, you spoke to me about emotional intelligence. And this was in the realm of accurately identifying your emotions and how those representation of those emotions impact others. Tell us about that briefly.
Yeah. I wrote this being anger management counselor, which I have for many years. I remember when I first became an anger management counselor, the first thing I did was I researched it to look at the effectiveness of it and what caused it to be so effective, what worked, what didn't work. And to my surprise, in my findings, I found that it wasn't that effective. And it wasn't because the content wasn't, but because people weren't using it. And so I said, okay, why aren't people using this information? And after surveys, which I was notorious for taking random surveys to clients, I realized that the information was too redundant. So I recreated, repackaged it, sprinkled some of my own seasoning, as I call it. But I put some of my own information in there, and from my experiences, called emotional fitness, and that includes the emotional intelligence piece, because unless you become intelligent about how to recognize your emotions, which type of emotion are you experiencing? You may think it's anger, but it may only be, well, not only, but it may be frustration. You may think it's frustration, but it may be disappointment. So emotional intelligence includes being able to accurately identify which emotion that you're experiencing, because there could be different treatment modalities to serve or to help a person get through or overcome a certain type of emotion.
You know, Gary, our time is we have 1 minute left, and I just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I think if people want to learn more about you, where can they go to learn more about some of your ideas and some of the teachings that you've given to us today?
TheDumasCompany.com just gives a very great basic, I won't even say synopsis, but just a basic outline of, I don't put too much online, but TheDumasCompany.com is a good place to start.
All right. Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us today, and thank you for inspiring me, not only in getting to know you before this, but also in helping me learn something about myself today. I really, really appreciate it. So thank you.
Well, David, thank you, man. And anything for you, because you're not only a person that supports my ideas and everything and my mission, but you also support the programming. So thank you for referrals and things. You know, it's like put your money where your mouth is kind of idea. Because people can like what you do, but they don't support it. And support is the ultimate expression of really believing what a person does.
Well, Gary, thank you so much. You're listening to Jaws of Justice on 90.1 KKFI.
It's the 420 drug war news. Last week, the Washington State House held a hearing about an effort to decriminalize all drugs. This is the chair of the Public Safety Committee, Roger Goodman.
We are going to be conducting a public hearing on House Bill 1499, we'll first have a staff report.
House Bill 1499 contains a series of changes relating to substance use disorder response. The first component of the bill requires the healthcare authority to establish a substance use recovery services plan to assist persons with substance use disorder in accessing treatment and recovery services. The plan must take into account certain considerations outlined in the bill and must articulate the manner in which continual, rapid, and widespread access to a comprehensive continuum of care is provided to all persons with substance use disorder. The plan must include specified substance use disorder services, including field-based outreach and engagement, peer recovery support services, intensive case management, substance use disorder treatment, and recovery support services, including housing, job training, and placement services. These services must be made available in or accessible to all jurisdictions, must be equitably distributed across urban and rural settings, and if possible, made available on demand through 24/7 peer recovery coach response, behavioral health triage centers, and other innovative rapid response models. The healthcare authority must also assemble a substance use recovery services advisory committee of individuals of varying backgrounds as specified in the bill to advise in the development and implementation of the plan. Controlled substances or drugs are substances that are scheduled under the Controlled Substances Act. Counterfeit substances are controlled substances that have been altered to look like substances produced by a drug manufacturer or dispenser. And legend drugs are prescription drugs. Current law penalties for unlawful possession of these substances range from a misdemeanor to a Class B felony, depending on the substance. Under House Bill 1499, possession of a personal use amount of these substances is decriminalized, as is use of drug paraphernalia when used for a personal use amount. The Healthcare Authority, in consultation with the Department of Health and the Pharmacy Quality Assurance Commission, as well as a work group composed of representatives of specified groups, must adopt rules establishing the maximum personal use amounts known to be used by people for recreational or non-medical and non-prescribed purposes. The bill also makes an exception to the criminal offense of delivery or possession or manufacture with intent to deliver drug paraphernalia for social services or healthcare agencies distributing the drug paraphernalia to others for personal use. House Bill 1499 also allows persons with a past conviction for possession of a controlled substance, counterfeit substance, or legend drug, or use of drug paraphernalia to vacate the record of conviction.
Over the next several days, we'll hear individuals giving their side of the story, so to speak, on this effort. I am Dean at DrugTruth.net.
Here in my problem, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it some way, somehow? Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.